way to like make like a proper like end, and then but still with you know more time afterwards, you know, to just learn a little bit something different or something. And I guess that's what the yeshiva does with June's man, but you know, like I always feel it's like it's anticlimactic at the end of the year, and it's like it's half the guys, and you know, just saying goodbye to half of you, and the other half of you, wherever you are. I hope it was great, you know. Like, but anyway, something to work on for next year. I got to figure that out for Samicha. But let's just finish up with a little bit of a parsha thought, and you know, and that'll be it. So, right around Shishi of this week's parsha, we have a total anomaly in the Torah. We have, of course, the total anomaly is the appearance of the upside down nuns, the brackets, so to speak, in the Torah that separates the psukim of Ayib and Soa from the rest of the Torah. So Gemara and Shabbos and Daf Kuftes Vav tells us that the reason is that there were three episodes that were all not flattering to the Jewish people. First, we ran away from our Sinai like Kitino Karatz mi Beis HaSefer, like children running away from school. One teacher told me, you know why it says Kitino Karatz mi Beis HaSefer and not like teachers that run away from schools, because no one runs as fast as teachers that are running away from school at the end of the year, but at least Ketino Haratz mi Beis HaSefer. Second of all, it's ironic because yesterday my wife called me and said you got to pick up that I had to go pick up my daughter at school because she missed her bus. It was the last day of school. I said, why did you miss your bus? She said, we didn't want to leave. We were just all crying upstairs. I'm like, yeah, that's against what Chazal say. You know, it's like, I don't know if I should believe her. It's up your courses. Ketino karas mi beis hasefer. You're supposed to be running away from school. But I guess the school is doing something right, right? Second of all, we complained about the frantic pace of our traveling in the Midbar, and finally we complained about not having what to eat. So the Gemara says that the Torah wanted to make a break because to have like a chazakah, three things, one right after the other, that are all unflattering to the Jewish people, would be very sad. So two questions. First of all, we can well understand the idea of breaking up a chazakah. I get that. But the time to do that is right before the chazakah develops, meaning you can have two bad things, so before you say the third bad thing, so then you want to put a break, put something cheerful, that's fine. But that's not what the Torah does. The Torah says one of the negative things, then Vayihi ben Soa Aron, and then the other two. So that seems, if it's all about breaking up a chazakah, breaking up the three in a row, why would you break it up after number one? L'chari, you should break it up after number two, before number three. And furthermore, so the Torah was just going to drop a random letter to surround the parshas of Vayihi ben Soa. Why dafka the letter Nun? Why not the letter Ayin for Avera or something? Or I don't know, something. What is it? Is it literally because the Torah was drawing brackets? There's no punctuation in the Torah. There are no brackets in the Torah. This is a letter Nun. It's an upside down Nun. It's Nun and Afuchim. So why the letter Nun? The letter Nun must represent something. So I heard, I don't remember if I heard it from him or in his name, but Rav Zev Lef answered these questions from Rav Zev Lef of Moshav Matis Yahu fame. You guys know who Rav Lef is? He was a big Talmud Chacham, and he was a product of NCSY, if I'm not mistaken, in Miami Beach. Rav Zev Lef answered these questions based on a medrash about the conversations between Yosef HaTzadik and his brothers when Yosef finally revealed his identity to his brothers. So we go all the way back there. Yosef says, Ani Yosef Ha'ura Vichai, and the medrash comments, Oilanu Miyom Adin, Oilanu Miyom HaTochacha. So if the youngest of the brothers can leave all of the older brothers speechless with such rebuke, so how are we going to face the Bezin Shalmaila, Liachar Me'a Ve'esrim? So the question that one may ask on the medrash is that, what do you mean, Yom HaTochacha? There was no Tochacha. Yosef didn't say anything toward his brothers. Where's the Tochacha? All he did was he identified himself and he asked about his father's well-being. So probably one of the most famous Beis Halevis. I guess really every Beis Halevi on Chumash is a famous Beis Halevi, because that, like, you know, some Svarim are very, very long and have a lot of different shtikalach, and like there are one or two great ones, and some Svarim are very short, and every single one is a grand slam, right? So the Beis Halevi on Chumash is that he didn't write too much, but every single one, there's like every Beis Halevi is a famous Beis Halevi. So Beis Halevi, again, if you've never heard it, you don't feel bad about yourself. There's always time to learn. Just because I called it famous, it doesn't mean you have to know it. But okay, fine. So now that I've massaged your egos and everything, okay. So the Beis Halevi explains that the rebuke was in that Yosef, in a single sentence, demonstrated to the brothers how terribly inconsistent their entire approach had been. But throughout all the negotiations and exercises that Yosef was putting his brothers through, they kept on talking about the father's fragile health and how he, and his emotional state and how he's going to handle it. So Yosef challenges them, if you're so concerned for your father, where was that concern when you sold me, when you sold his most beloved son? Meaning, if you were really concerned about him, then I never should have ended up here in the first place, because that would have been very, that would have broken him, that did break him, that destroyed him. And the idea of consistency, of remaining true to our values, regardless of how perfect those values may be, is a very high value in the Torah in and of itself. I mean, just the idea of behaving in a consistent fashion, of not being hypocritical, of being people who behave in a way that reflects a shita. You know, when people claim to believe in human rights, for example, so they have deep concern for the oppressed and then blatantly support a terrorist organization that's not at all shy about erasing, you know, Israel, men, women, and children off of the map. You know, like, there's like a blatant hypocrisy that we see in society way, way too much. I think there's a quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson once said, "What you do speaks so loudly that I cannot hear what you say." Meaning that sometimes people are saying whatever they're saying, but what they're doing is really speaking volumes. Hypocrisy is, in a certain way, the worst sin. An honest sinner at least knows that he's a sinner. Somebody who's falsely righteous doesn't even know who he is. And that's the message of this Beis Halevi, that the idea of having to answer for our inconsistencies is perhaps one of the more frightening elements of the Yom HaDin. So going back to our questions, we ran away from our Sinai, we demonstrated like this tremendous energy and this ability to move quickly, Kitino Karatz, Mibes HaSefer, that we were in great shape, all of a sudden we're able to run, and Hashem sees our ability to run and to move with alacrity, and he began to move us in the direction of Eretz Yisrael with similar speed. Yeah, you're moving? Okay, let's keep it moving. So run toward Eretz Yisrael. We're going to go from one location to the next location to the next location. Let's go. Because we have the energy. And then we complain about the pace that Hashem had set for us to go to Eretz Yisrael. It wasn't just that we complained, but it's that particular complaint revealed this horrible inconsistency in the Jewish people. We had plenty of energy to run from Kedusha, but for some reason no energy to run toward Kedusha. And that was the problem. Of course we know that the halacha is the opposite. A person is supposed to run toward Shul, toward Kedusha, and only move away from Shul slowly. A person is supposed to arrive a few minutes early to davening and leave a few minutes late. Rav Lef explains that's why we split up the chazakah davka there. It wasn't only about splitting up three averos or three things that reflect poorly in Klal Yisrael. If that's all it were about, we would have put the mechitza between the second and the third misdeeds of Klal Yisrael. But no, it's about taking the two things that reflect an inherent inconsistency and breaking them up from each other. And that's how we save Klal Yisrael from the busha of having seen of seeing those three parshios one right after the other. It was about breaking up our hypocrisy and inconsistency in our approach, and to accomplish that, the division had to be between the first and the second parshios. And this is where the letter Nun comes in. I think I heard this from Rabbi Ephraim Shapiro from Miami, from Florida. I think he once pointed out that the letter Nun typically or often is used to connote perpetuating something. In Tehillim Ayin Beis, Lefnei Shemesh Yinon Shemo, and the Gemara Sanhedrin says that Yinon is Yud Nun, Vav Nun is a name of Mashiach. Right, Menachem, Shiloh, Yinon, Chanina are his four names with the acronym of Mashiach. And the word Yinon means to perpetuate. Like a Nin, V'neched, is a descendant. Why is a Nin a descendant? Because he's someone who perpetuates the family. Rav David Cohn explains, Rav David Cohn from Flatbush, whose son was hanging around here a little bit last week, Rav Ami Cohn, so you gave me the Sefer, right? So Rav David Cohn explains, the Rav of Kvul Yavitz, you know, big posik. So he explains that he's very into like language. He's very into like understanding the shorish of like Yiddish words and finding where they come from in Tanakh. And he says the word enikel is right. Enikel is a grandchild, right? So he says it comes from Vasne Einenu Ukal. that it wasn't extinguished. It doesn't extinguish quickly. So enikul is that your family is not extinguished, that the family is perpetuated, that it continues to say nenu ukal. So he says that's where the Yiddish word enikul comes from. I don't know if that's correct or not, but it's a nice idea, right? Meaning the idea that a family is a nenu ukal when we produce descendants. A nun is also a fish, because a fish represents pruravu, according to the Gemara in Ksubis, right? The Gemara in Ksubis says that simen bracha of Dagim is Puruvu. The fish is not subject to Ayin Hara, because according to the Gemara in Brachos, because the Gemara in Brachos says that Anami Zarad Yosef Kasina, that just like a fish is not subject to Ayin Hara, the Yidgu Larov Bekeravart, Ma Dagim Shabiyam Ein Ayin Hara Shaladispam, just like the fish don't have Ayin Hara, so too the Zarad Yosef don't have Ayin Hara. But it works with the assumption that a fish doesn't have Ayin Hara. Why? Because perhaps there's nobody that looks askance at somebody who is consistent and perpetuates a steady message, and that's what the fish represents, a perpetuation, a consistency from one generation to the next. A nun at the end of a word is a straight long line, right? What they call a nun sofit or an endonun, depending where you went to elementary school, right? It's one straight line. We have rachmanus, but when we describe the Kodesh Baruch Hu having the midas harachmanus, we say that not that he has rachmanus, but that he is a rachaman. We add a nun at the end to demonstrate that it's a consistent mida, that it's something that is not just an event that someone had rachmanus. If someone is a rachaman, it means that they represent rachmanus on a consistent basis. Brisker Rav explains that the lamed means to learn, but if someone learns consistently well, he is a lamdan, right? With the nun at the end, the person could tell a sheker, but if he always tells lies, he is a shakran, right? That I've told you this, I think, when before Rav Elyashiv passed away, someone put out a 3-volume biography of Rav Elyashiv called Hashakdan, because of his tremendous hasmada, and they put it in Rashi letters. So my wife said, what an awful thing. Someone put out a book of Rav Elyashiv and they called it Hashakran? That's horrible. No, it's Hashakdan. It's not Hashakran. She misread it. But but someone who tells consistent shaker is a Shakran. The true lesson that children learn from their parents are those messages that they hear consistently. You know, I always like to point out, Rav Willig always says that around Pesach time, that he thinks like a parent's avoda at the Seder is to say the same vartlach year in and year out, over and over again. Because those are going to be the messages that the grandkids are going to remember, you know, long after you're gone. They'll say, remember when Zaidi so-and-so used to say this every single year? And then their kids are going to hear it at the Seder every single year. Those are the messages that stick, you know, those are the messages that really... they really stay with people. When we accepted the Torah, we didn't say Eesev Eshma, Naasev V'Nishma. We added a nun to indicate that we're going to be consistent and faithful. And maybe the greatest inconsistency that we typically express, Ephraim Shapiro points out, is in the use of our time. You know, you see, it's not only with yeshiva guys, it's with Balabatim also, it's with everybody. You know, we tend to be very rushed at certain times, and other times we have plenty of time for everything. You know, we have plenty of time to waste. You know, you see it in shuls a lot of time. At the end of davening, right, by the last, but once you hit aleinu, like everyone's tefillin is off and everyone's checking out, yeah, hang out a little bit after that. Hang out in the parking lot of the shul after that. You know, people schmoozing forever. Like your tefillin was off before, like before Uval Tzion was over. But plenty of time to schmooze. Oh, what's going on today? Oh, I'm not going into the office today. I'm working from home. Like, hello. Like you know, they say that it's called Kaddish Yasom because the Kaddish itself is a Yasom at the end of the davening. You know that there's no one there to answer that Kaddish. But it's an inherent inconsistency. I got a call once from a kid in my shul who was in his second year. At the time, I think he was in his first year, actually, in Eretz Yisrael, and he was, you know, in all honesty and totally earnestly asking me why it's okay that men go to the beach. Why isn't that a problem of Shmiras Einayim? And he was confused. Like, how could it be that people learned in yeshiva, and presumably when they were his age were on fire with Torah would just ignore Shemiras Einayim so publicly and so consistently. And very often the same people that are going to monitor what their children watch on television and movies, lest there be something non-sanua about it, well, no problem, just hanging out on the beach, you know, in a place that's a makom parutz. So obviously there's no answer to that. On the flip side, I've mentioned to you in the past, Rav Shai Shechter once told me that Rav Mati Neuberger told him that in his entire life he never once saw his father lie down in a bed. Which I don't even get what that means, but he said he just usually saw that whenever he saw his father sleeping, it was on a sefer. He just fell asleep learning, you know, late at night. And that's the only, he never saw his father like go to bed, like go to sleep. He grew up in the house like his whole life. He never saw his father go to sleep. I don't even know what that means, but you know how extraordinary that is for a child who grew up in the house to say that the tzidkus and hasmada that the world sees is only like the tip of the iceberg of the tzidkus and hasmada that the family is able to see. That's you know, yom adin, yom atochacha. You talk about consistency in a person's life. And you know, I think it's a fairly reasonable parting message before the summer. Everyone does their own things for the summer. Everyone's got different things going on. Some people are running programs. Some people are doing internships. Some people are, but we have to make sure that. That what we do over the summer and how we spend the summer and how we utilize our time over the summer, obviously a little bit of time for relaxation is in order, good and healthy, and obviously a lot of us are going to be involved in learning Yom V'Layla, and a lot of us are going to be involved in doing internships and other things, but to make sure that there's nothing inconsistent about it, that the same energy that we put toward other things and more should be put toward learning. We should express that same excitement and that same desire to maintain that kesher with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and to make sure that it's a longer break than it needs to be. The whole system in America is so broken. The whole idea that it makes so much more sense to just go like they do, like a yeshiva schedule, to go to Tisha B'Av. Good, you have a 3 week span as money. Like the idea of what used to be 2 months and is now pretty much 3 months for like kids to be off in the summer, which we then expect as we go into adulthood, and like we're in for this rude awakening when like you don't have that. Like that whole system is so terrible. It's so broken. There's so many pitfalls that could happen, and we have to be on guard, and we have to make sure that even though you may be running a program or you may be doing a million other things, to make sure that consistency is evident, that Yom Adin, Yom Atochacha, we should have that clear nun at the end, that we're a lamdan and a shakdan and all of those things that we want to be, and not the nuns that, of the negative adjectives that could be used to describe those who maybe aren't as consistent. Okay, and with that, I wish everyone a fantastic summer. Stay in touch, of course. And okay, and thank you for always being here and learning together. Okay.